the Rebbe, at that time, the Chassidim would bring the Rebbe their pans, and the Rebbe would read them on the oil. The Chassidim would write pans to the Friedrich Rebbe, and the Rebbe would take them to the oil, and he would read them. It was before the Rebbe officially accepted the Nesias. And because it had already been publicized in a number of places, copies of the pans that the Friedrich Rebbe himself wrote to his father, and copies of the pans that the Rebbe Rashab, his father, wrote to his father and grandfather. And in one of the things that, in the wording of those pans, it said, L'kvay Kedushas Admor, Alpit Shuvas Mahari Bruna. What's Alpit Shuvas Mahari Bruna? The Mahari Bruna in the Tshuva raises the question, how is it that we go to Tzaddikim to ask us to intercede on our behalf? One of the 13 principles of faith that the Rambam, in fact, the first principle of faith of the Rambam is that the Eibush himself completely governs the world and runs the world, and that we don't have, there are no intermediaries in terms of running the world, and therefore we don't pray to any intermediaries. So the question is, if that's the case, so how is it that we go, if the Eibush makes all the decisions, and the Eibush all the power remains in his hands, he doesn't give over the running of the world to anybody else, and anything he does through these other forces, they're only being used like a hatchet in the hand of the one, like a tool, but they have no say in the running of the world. So how do we go to a tzaddik to ask us to intercede on our behalf when we to beseech our cause in prayer when we're supposed to go directly to theirs? So the Mari Bruna explains that just like a person who approaches a king, and he knows that if he'll approach the king, he's a little nobody, and he's not worthy of anything. And because he's a little nobody, he's not worthy of anything, the king might be less inclined to fulfill his request. So what does he do? He approaches an officer, a minister, somebody who has some kind of position, closeness to the king. And he asks him to please intercede with the king on my behalf. If the request comes from you, it's more likely that the king will grant the request. It doesn't mean that, so he says, the Rambam only says that you know how to bring your you know how to pray to an intermediary when you think that that they have some say in your request being granted. The Rambam says that's not true. The Eibushter has the only say. But to come to someone and say that you should petition the Eibushter on my behalf, I'm aware of the fact that the Eibushter makes all the decisions. And ultimately the final decision, all hashpoyos and everything comes directly from the Eibushter himself. I'm only coming to you that you should intercede with the Eibushter on my behalf. You should plead my case for me. But it doesn't mean that I chas v'shalom attribute to you any powers which are exclusively the domain of the Eibushter. So that's the Tshuva's Mahari Bruna, and the Rabbeim would actually write in their pans that when they would approach, when they would write in their pans, they would write that this pan is Alpi Tshuva's Mahari Bruna. It was actually written into the pan.
Where did he live, Mahari Bruna?
I'm not sure. So this is how he wrote into their pan. So the Rebbe, so people were sending in their pans to the Rebbe to read the pans for the Friedrich Rebbe that the Rebbe was taking to the oil down in Tavshin Yod. So the Rebbe saw that the people are writing, Alpi Tshuvas Mahari Bruna, because that's what they saw that the Friedrich Rebbe wrote. So the Rebbe reacting to that said the following. He said that he would like to see this practice of writing Alpi Tshuvas Mahari Bruna discontinued. Why? The Rebbe says that I never saw this anywhere in Chassidus. It's my own personal, it's never stated anywhere explicitly in Chassidus. My own personal feeling. And whoever wants to argue Whoever doesn't want to accept my feeling doesn't have to. And the Rebbe said that the whole kasha of the Marie Brunner, he said that the whole kasha of the Marie Brunner is based on the fact that there is a supplicant, a petitioner, and there is the Eibishter. And so in order to connect the supplicant with his creator, you need an intermediary who's closer to the creator than the petitioner, than the supplicant, than the one who has this problem. So the whole basis of the Marie Brunner is that you have two separate entities here, a Jew and his creator. And the question is, how could you go to someone else? And the answer is that he only functions as an intermediary. He doesn't function as he functions as a mamutza hamachaber, as opposed to a mamutza hamafsik. The Rebbe says that, but still, in all, that's still technically a mamutza hamafsik. It's based on the fact that they're separate entities. You need a third entity to connect them. The Rebbe says, but when it comes to a chassid and a Rebbe, when the chassid comes to the Rebbe, it's not that A is coming to B in order to be connected to C, but rather when the chassid comes to the Rebbe, he feels that he, the Rebbe, and the Eibishter are all one. And this the Rebbe added, that this is something I didn't see, and this is my feeling, that a Rebbe is Atmos Umahos V'yatzichangiton in Agav. God's very essence as he placed himself in a physical body. So everybody looks at the Sikha and everybody runs around all excited. What is it? Oh, the Rebbe says the Rebbe is God. God is the Rebbe. And there's articles written about it that this is idolatry. It's not. It is. It isn't. It's back and forth. Everyone's all excited about this fact that the Rebbe says that the Rebbe is Atmos Umahos V'yatzichangiton in Agav. But Lamaisa, and the Rebbe brings various proofs to this concept in from the Zohar, and also in Nigla, this idea appears. But that's not the thrust of that system. That doesn't answer the kasha. By saying that the Rebbe, the Eibishter all one, that's not how the Rebbe answers the kasha. The way the Rebbe answers the kasha is by saying the chassid, the Rebbe and the Eibishter all one. That when a chassid comes to the Rebbe, he doesn't come to the Rebbe. The Rebbe doesn't say he comes to the Rebbe because coming to the Rebbe is the same thing as coming to God. That's not the answer. The answer that the Rebbe gives is that coming to the Rebbe is that the chassid is the same thing as God. So there's no petitioner and there's no one asking to Eibishter. He becomes completely connected, one with the Eibishter. So there is no, in other words, the function of the Rebbe is to connect the Jew to the Eibishter in such a way that he's one with the Eibishter, and therefore this whole issue is irrelevant. And therefore his prayers are not an expression of his sensing himself as separate from the Eibishter and having to come on to the Eibishter. And therefore he's looking for someone who's got an inner track. Maybe because, in other words, the Marie Brunner is based on the concept that I recognize my distance from the Eibishter. And because I recognize how distant I am from the Eibishter, I come to somebody who I consider to be closer to the Eibishter than I. So the whole emphasis of coming to someone is based on the fact that I perceive myself as not only separate and distinct from the Eibishter, but distant. The Rebbe says that when a chassid comes to the Rebbe, what's he coming to the Rebbe for? He's not coming for the Rebbe so that he could maintain his distance from the Eibishter and let the Rebbe argue his case. He's coming to the Rebbe because he wants to bridge the gap. He wants to close that distance that there is between him and the Eibishter. He's coming to the Rebbe that the Rebbe should help him reveal the fact that he and the Eibishter are one. And if he's in such a situation where he and the Eibishter are one, so automatically all of his needs are taken care of. It's only when you're separate and distinct from the Eibishter, you're a separate entity. And now we have to look, who are you? You're distant from the Eibishter. So now the Eibishter looks, you need something, you have a need, you need something, Krishna says, who are you? What do you need it for? Why do you deserve it? Why should I give it to you? Why shouldn't I give it to you? So you have to measure who you are and whether you deserve it or not. So then you have to try to get someone with an inside track to try to get it to you, even though you don't deserve it. When a person comes, but a chassid comes, doesn't come to the Rebbe for that. Chassid doesn't come for the Rebbe to see his request filled. Comes to the Rebbe to connect to the Eibishter. The request is an excuse. The request is an excuse to connect to the Eibishter. To come to the Rebbe. He comes to the Rebbe with the request, but what does he want? He wants the request. He wants the Eibishter. So he comes to the Rebbe in order to experience the realization, the reality that the chassid, the Rebbe, and the Eibishter are all one. And then the request becomes irrelevant. It's a non-issue, it's no request. But mainly, you're connected to the Eibishter, so automatically you have everything you need. So it comes out that the chiddush of the sikha is not that the Rebbe is atmos and mahosir yatzichayin getan and agor. That's not the big trask, the big chiddush of the sikha. The big chiddush of the sikha is that every chassid is atmos and mahosir yatzichayin getan and agor. I don't come to the Rebbe to see the atmos and mahosir that's a hanging time in the Rebbe. I come to the Rebbe in order to discover the God that's within me. The whole idea of trying to talk, I've heard from Brangers and Hasidim like trying to outdo each other in describing how great the Rebbe is. You know, and then there's this Hasidim who made comments like the Eibishter should see that, the Rebbe should see that the Eibishter is gesund. And then there would be all kinds of comments like to show How to me that the Rebbe is it, he's ultimate, he's everything. But all of that is done in a way that you miss the whole point. The whole point is, so are you. If you come to the Rebbe because you want to see, oh, an interesting thing, someone who's close to the Eibishter. He's so close to the Eibishter that you can't even tell where the Eibishter ends and he begins. That's not what coming to the Rebbe is for. The Rebbe is not a curiosity. It was not a place to visit on a tourist attraction. You're coming to the Rebbe, what are you coming to the Rebbe for? You're coming to the Rebbe for to reveal the fact that you also are one with the Rebbe. Come to the Rebbe for your hemorrhoids. Come to the Rebbe for your stomach ache, for your paycheck. Come to the Rebbe for God. These are excuses. We're so grub, we're so lost, and in order to remind us, to remind us of the fact that we need something, so the Eibishter is kind enough, he sends hemorrhoids. But the idea is that it's supposed to remind you that you need the Eibishter. Like the Baal Shem Tov says, that the tefillah l'ani, that the prayer of the poor person is the highest form of prayer. He says, why? He says, when you come into a king, he says, when the king announces that the doors are open and people can come in, the king has a huge palace, magnificent palace, with many, many chambers. And in each chamber is decorated with, as you get from one chamber to the next, each one is progressively more ornate and elaborate, and with the furnishings and decorations and jewelry and carpets. And as you come in, there are people, there are servants approaching each person who comes in with more and more attractive gifts as you go from room to room. So the person who's coming in because he needs something from the king, because he has needs, he's coming to daven because he feels like a rich guy, and the problem is that he's missing something. He doesn't have something that he doesn't have one of his needs. So if he's coming to the king to see his needs met, so such a person is. You know, after a while, he's going to get all these gifts in the various chambers. He's going to get so excited with these gifts that he'll completely forget about the king, because that's not what he came for. He came for himself. It's the poor person who realizes, who am I? What? Gifts, king. Who am I to come and ask the king for anything? But the fact is, the king said anyone who wants to make a request could come in. So you can't just walk in. You can't just walk in with nothing. You have to walk in with a request. But at the same time, who am I to have my request filled? But still, it's an opportunity to see the king. So he walks in. He's not distracted by all of the gifts. He's not distracted by all of the beauty and glamour and glitz of all the different rooms, because he doesn't expect anything. He's coming to see the king. So he makes it safely through all the rooms until he finally gets to the king. He finally gets to the king and he says, King says, what did you come for? So he says, I came for my hemorrhoids. But he didn't. He really came to see the king. He just needs to have a read. The king said, whoever has a request, come see me. So he comes in with a request. I need lunch. Okay, you need lunch, so we'll take you. From now on, you'll have. That's not what he came for. He came for the king. So when a person, the Rebbe says like this, when your person is coming to the Rebbe and he writes that he's coming up in Shuvas Marie Brunner, whatever the Friedrich Rebbe did and the Rebbe, why they did it, that's none of our business. But if you're coming with your Shuvas Marie Brunner under your arm, what are you saying? The message that you're saying is that, listen, I'm far away from the Eibushter. You're close. You talk for me. There's something I need. There's something I want from you. And as soon as I get it, bye, see you. Nice knowing you. Thanks a lot. Tell me what I owe you for the service. And that's it. And there's a lot of people look at the Rebbe that way. Okay, Rebbe, I need parnasa. What do you want for it? Chitas. Okay. How am I? I need parnasa. The Rebbe wants chitas. I'm stuck. I'll do chitas. Rebbe, I need to find a house. I need a bargain. I can't. It's hard. I to find a house. It's within my means. Rebbe, I need a house. So, Rebbe, what do you want from me for the house? What do you want for the house? Let me start giving maisa. Tuition doesn't count for maisa. Okay, I'll start giving maisa, but I'll get a house. Okay, that's it. I got my house. You got your maisa. We're square. So when a person is coming with that kind of relationship. When a person is coming looking for to have his needs met, so that's it, you can come to the Rebbe, come, get your needs met, go home, and you missed the boat. You missed the whole point. And even if a person is more Hasidish, he's coming to see God. God, the Yeretzich Eingeton in the Rebbe. God, the way he put himself into the Rebbe. He's a Hasidish guy, he's not interested, he's not coming to. He wants to see God personified. But he still wants to go home the same Rebbe Jung he was. He may want to go home even more refined than he was. He wants to be a big chassid, a bigger chassid. But he missed the boat. The Rebbe says, it's not what you come to the Rebbe. You come to the Rebbe to recognize the fact that you, the Rebbe, and God are all one. To be so totally connected with the Eibushter that the question is not where does God end and the Rebbe begin. The question, where does God and the Rebbe end and where do you begin? That the chassid, the Rebbe, and the Eibushter all work. So there's no request, there's no petitioner, there's no petitioner, there's not anything. There's only the Eibushter.
Why are we one? Because we have a neshama elokeus, is that why?
Why are we one? Because the fact is that God's essence is the essence of every Jew. That is the essence of the Jewish neshama, is the divine essence. And therefore, the truth is, that everything, that every Jew is completely one with the Eibushter. The problem is that the fact that every Jew is one with the Eibushter is something which is concealed. And it's something which we've been working on for thousands of years and trying to reveal. By other Marishan had it, by him it was revealed. But then he decided that, it was revealed not through any effort of his own. And he saw an opportunity to expand his base of knowledge, to experience something outside of his connection with God. And he had that opportunity to experience something else outside of his direct connection to God. And he took that opportunity. And therefore, that oneness with God became latent and concealed. And it was not something that one experienced consciously. Along came Moshe Rabbeinu. And Moshe Rabbeinu brought the Shekhinah back down to the earth. That the Jewish people at that point in time experienced that total connectedness to Hashem through Moshe Rabbeinu. Communications face to face. But the face to face was also through Moshe Rabbeinu. But on the one hand, it wasn't the ultimate connection. And on the other hand, because you see that it wasn't permanent. Along came the Chet HaEgel, and poof, it disappeared below the surface again. And people again experience themselves as separate, something separate and distinct from the Eibushter, with their own distinct drives and desires and wants and concerns and issues, and struggling to try to bridge that gap. The individual who is going to reinstate that level of connectedness to God, to the extent in which a person's entire being experiences himself as consciousness, as nothing more than an extension of God himself, that is the role of Mashiach. That is something that only Mashiach can accomplish.
To bring it to our conscious level, you mean?
Sure. The connection is there no matter what. But you don't experience it as, you know, in your conscious awareness, you experience yourself as something separate and distinct, living a whole separate world, a whole separate existence. You have a whole separate point of view, a whole separate perception of reality.
A whole separate
than
set
God.
Of desires.
Yeah. But when it's revealed, the true essence of a Jew, that is one with God, so what God wants is what he wants. It's not what God desires, that is my desire. That's me. It's not it's my desire because I will listen to God. Or I will submit to God and bend my desires to his. When we reach the point where it's revealed that the essence, that the Jew and God are all one, then God's desire is my desire. It's not something that it's not something that I have to do. It is something that I am. Until now, fulfilling God's will is something that we do. And we could do it in one of two levels. One is by bending our own will, which is called batel ritzeincha mepnei ritzeinei. Bend your will. Nullify your will before his will. It means even though you'd rather be doing something else, God tells you, I want you to do this, so you bend, you submit, and you nullify your will, you cancel out your will before his will. A higher level of serving God is, that the person actually becomes transformed to the point that he considers it an honor and a privilege to fulfill God's will. But it's still he fulfilling God's will. When the true essence of all of this is all this avodah is all up to, meant to lead up to a time when through this whole process of connecting to God through these various actions that we do is to reach the point that we experience our state of being as one with God. And from that vantage point, then my will is God's will. It's not I am canceling out my will, where I am even adjusting my will to his will. My will is his will because I am nothing more than an extension of him. What he wants is what I want. That's me. I'm not sacrificing for him. I'm not breaking myself for him. That is me. That's who I am. That's what I want. That is something that only Mashiach could offer. That's something that was not available in earlier generations. It simply was not available because it could not be done, because the world wasn't ready for it. So when the Rebbe says before he even officially takes the Nesius, the Rebbe says like this, my father-in-law wrote Alpichuvas Maribro. That's what he wrote. In the previous generation, they wrote Alpichuvas Maribro. Why? Because in the previous generation, as much as a connection you could experience with the Rebbe, but it was still a connection, a bond between separate entities who were bound up together. The depth of that bond is awesomely deep. To the point that the Friedrich Rebbe once expressed himself in Poland, he said at the time that the reason why Shlomo HaMelech wrote Shir HaShirim and used for the mashal the love between a man and woman was because Chassidus had not yet come along, because he never saw a Rebbe and a Chassid. But if he would have seen the love between the Rebbe and a Chassid, so to him, the greatest example, the greatest model for love was man and woman. But if he would have seen Rebbe Chassid, then he would have written Shir HaShirim based on the Rebbe Chassid relationship. So obviously we're talking about a depth of connection, a bond that runs extremely deep. And to the point that the Friedrich Rebbe writes in one of his letters, that it's not enough to have a spiritual love for the Rebbe. It's not enough to love what the Rebbe does for you spiritually, but a person has to have a real physical love, a physical love that affects his physical heart and is drawn to a real physical love for the Rebbe, an attachment. And the depths of this love was expressed in people's readiness to make the greatest sacrifices. The Friedrich Rebbe, when you became a Shlomo, the Friedrich Rebbe meant, odds were you were dead. It wasn't fun and games. The odds are, whether it was 6 months, a year, your odds were you ended up in Siberia and or dead. It wasn't, only a very small percentage actually was shlomo the Friedrich Rebbe and lived to tell about, in Russia, and lived to tell about. So the depth of connection, the bond runs extremely deep and to the point of the highest self-sacrifice. But the Rebbe came along and the Rebbe said, now we're ready to go on to a new stage. Beyond discussions, beyond bonds, beyond love, beyond anything. We're ready to go to the stage of oneness. That your whole being is an extension of the Rebbe, is an extension of God. That your whole being is one with the Rebbe and one with God. The Rebbe is your life. Not the Rebbe is one to whom you give up your life. You sacrifice your life for the Rebbe. But that the Rebbe and the Eibishter are your life. That is life itself. That is who you are. It's not something. It's not someone who you do things for or because you love. It goes much deeper than just love. Of course, when you have that depth of connection, of course, the love is there also. The idea is that you should experience that kind of oneness, and the love should be an outgrowth of that bond and connection of that oneness. But so when the Rebbe came along in Tavshin Yud, and the Rebbe says that a chassid comes to a Rebbe in order to experience the reality that the Rebbe, the chassid, and the Eibishter are all one. And therefore, the whole issue of go-betweens is completely irrelevant. It's a non-issue. What the Rebbe was describing here, what the Rebbe was setting the stage for a whole new kind of relationship. A relationship that transcends all other pre-existing conventional relationships. What? Chadhu? That a Jew and the Eibishter are all one? And when you get to the point that a Jew and the Eibishter are all one, that's even higher than any connection that's established through Torah. It's higher than any connection established through mitzvahs. The Rebbe explains in many places that it says that in order to get into Gan Eden, how do you get into Gan Eden? You have to deserve it. You need to have you have to have learned a lot of Torah and done a lot of mitzvahs in order to get into Gan Eden. Tchias HaMeisim, it says, Kol Yisrael Yesham Chelek Leilam Haba. Tchias HaMeisim, which is obviously a higher revelation. It says all Jews have a share in that. It's obviously a higher revelation because we have souls like Moshe Rabbeinu and the others that are sitting, going from level to level in Gan Eden for thousands of years, for over 3,000 years. And they're going to leave whatever spiritual heights they have scaled and come down to be here for Tchias HaMeisim. So obviously the revelation of Tchias HaMeisim is infinitely greater than anything experienced in the highest realms of Gan Eden. And yet, we say that every Jew has a share in Tchias HaMeisim. When it comes to Gan Eden, it says, Mi Yala Bahar Hashem, who goes up in the mountain of Hashem? The Kicha Paim of our Leva. Someone whose hands are clean and his heart is pure. Not everyone can go up. But when we talk about the Eibishter coming down here, all Jews have a share in the world. And the Rebbe says, why is this? So the classic answer that's given is that Gan Eden is more related to the union of Torah, and Tchias HaMeisim is more connected in the mitzvahs, and even the empty ones amongst the Jewish people are full of mitzvahs like a pomegranate, but they also have mitzvahs. That still doesn't fully explain the issue. The fact is that Gan Eden is Torah and mitzvahs, and even when we say that that every year has mitzvahs, but still there's a major difference between one Jew and the other. What does it mean that every Jew has mitzvahs, therefore every Jew is a part of Tchias HaMeisim? So the Rebbe explains that why is it that every Jew has mitzvahs? Even the empty Jews have mitzvahs. Because the fact is that every Jew is intrinsically one with the Eibishter. So even a Jew who's so totally unaware of this connection, he's completely unconscious of this connection, the connection itself ends up being expressed without him being consciously aware of it. We have to work in order to develop, because it's not conscious. So in order to develop this kind of connection, you have to learn a lot of Torah and do a lot of mitzvahs. But the fact that it's not conscious doesn't mean it's there. And therefore, whether he's interested or not, that connection expresses itself in one way or another through mitzvahs. He ends up doing mitzvahs because he's intrinsically connected. Not because he's trying to establish a connection. He's not even thinking about God. Because by definition he's connected, therefore he has mitzvahs. But the Rebbe says that the reason why every Jew has a share in the world to come is because the connection that a Jew has to Hashem is higher than the connection that's established by Torah and mitzvahs. The connection that's established by Torah and mitzvahs is necessary in a world where the oneness between God and the Jewish people is not manifest. And we have to bring it to light. We have to bring it from its concealed state. So we have to build, we need these building blocks, these links to build a relationship. But the point is not to have a relationship built on, based on what, just on these things. The point is to ultimately reach the point where we see revealed that innate, inborn connection that's already there. I'm not trying to create something new. We need to create something new in order to reveal that which is already there.
So why do we have to come on to say that the reason why every Jew will get the Tchias Amesim is because they're full of mitzvahs like pomegranates?
Because that is the fact that every Jew has mitzvahs like a pomegranate is in itself an expression of the fact that there's no such thing as a Jew whose connection to the Eibishter is completely cut off.
So it's not that we're saying that don't have mitzvahs.
So on one level, the answer is because Tchias Amesim is for mitzvahs. I'm not negating that answer.
Okay.
Giving a deeper insight into that answer, which is on a deeper level. What's really happening here is that what Eilam Abba is really all about is the revelation of the connection between God and the Jewish people, which transcends the connection of Torah and mitzvahs. And that's how Chassidus explains that it says in the Zohar that there are three knots which are connected one to the other, which connect the Eibishter, the Torah, and the Yid. The question is that when you're trying to connect three things, you only need two knots. You need a knot between A and B, and a knot between B and C, and then they're all connected. So what does it mean that this? It says that it's not. It says that the Eibishter, the Yid, connect to the Torah, and the Torah connects to the Eibishter. That's what the Zohar contains. That's two knots. Where's the third knot? So Chassidus explains that the third knot is the bond that exists between the Jew and the Eibishter, which doesn't need the Torah as an intermediate. The Zohar describes the Jew connecting to the Torah and the Torah connecting to the Eibishter. The way that the Jew connects to the Eibishter through an intermediary. But the truth is that once a Jew establishes that connection, he causes to be revealed the deeper connection that a Jew has with the Eibishter, which is higher than the connection through Torah, which doesn't need the Torah. And in fact, so therefore there's a knot, there's really a knot between the Jew and the Eibishter direct. And in that configuration, it comes out that the Jew is the go-between the Eibishter and the Torah. As Chassidus, that's how Chassidus explains the spiritual meaning of Torah Lishma, that it means that he draws godliness into the Torah. Because the Jew has a higher connection to God than the Torah has. So the Jew is the link between God and the Torah. So it comes out that the whole process that the Eibishter made of these separate entities called the Jew and the Eibishter, and an intermediary called Torah, or an intermediary called Moshe Rabbeinu, who is completely bound up with the Torah, to the point that the Torah is called Teras Moshe. And the Torah of the future is called Teras Shel Moshiach. The first Moshe and the final Moshe was Moshiach are so bound up with the Torah that the Torah is called theirs. But the fact is that the whole point of intermediaries is to reveal the fact that there is a deeper bond that every Jew has directly without any intermediary. The bond that already exists, but it's latent, it's hidden, it's concealed.
So they're like a revealed bond.
No, Chassidus explains that in that bond, there's two levels. There's, through the Torah, there's the revealed part of the Torah. There's the concealed part of the Torah. The revealed part of the Torah connects us with the Eibishter, connects our revealed faculties with the Eibishter. The concealed part of the Torah enables us to connect our, to bring out our deeper levels of devotion and commitment, our deeper aspects of our neshama to connect with Hashem. But all that is still not the essence. The essential bond between a Jew and the Eved, that after the external bond is completed, and the inner bond is completed, then is revealed the essential bond, which the essential bond doesn't need the Torah. The essential bond is every Jew has directly with the Eved. And the same thing with Mashiach. When the Rebbe comes and says that a chassid comes to the Rebbe, he doesn't come to the Rebbe as a go-between. And he doesn't even come to the Rebbe to see God manifested in the Rebbe. He comes to the Rebbe to experience the fact that the Rebbe, the chassid, and the Rebbe and the Eibushta are all one. He comes to the Rebbe to experience his essential bond with the Rebbe. Traditionally, a Jew came to a Rav, a teacher, in order to help him facilitate his revealed bond with the Eved. You had a Rebbe, Rosh Hashiva, who taught you what your obligations are, taught you Torah, taught you the revealed portion of Torah. So you had a teacher, a Rebbe, who his job was to establish the revealed link between a Jew and the Eved. Then along came the Baal Shem Tov with the Din of a Rebbe. That, you know, it's originally Moshe Rabbeinu. What did the Jews get from Moshe Rabbeinu? They got from Moshe Rabbeinu what Moshe Rabbeinu taught them, the halachas. Ve'elam mishpatim asher tasim lefnei. Moshe Rabbeinu came and he taught them the rules, the laws. What you have to do in order to establish it. The Baal Shem Tov came along and he brought the Indian of Moshe Rabbeinu came down on an even deeper level. And now Moshe Rabbeinu of each generation became the conduit through which a Jew could experience the revelation of his inner bond with the Eved. So Chassidus brought out the pnimius of a Jew, his innermost bond with the Eved, to the point of his deepest pnimius, which is to the point of Mesiras Nefesh. Mashiach's job is to bring out the essence. That's all steps in the process. The revealed bond between the Jew and the Eved, the inner bond between the Jew and the Eved. But that's all only leading up to the final Meshe Rabbeinu, the last Meshe Hu Geil Rishon Hu Geil Achron, the final Meshe Rabbeinu who's embodied in Mashiach, that his job is to enable the Jew to experience his essential bond with the Eved. And his essential bond with the Eved, at that point, the Jew and the Eved are all one. So what do you need Mashiach for? Because it's through him that you experience that essential bond. It's through coming to the Rebbe, the idea is, so the Rebbe right away set the tone. If you want to know, from day one, the Rebbe said that what he's offering as a Rebbe is Geula, is Mashiach. I mean, that's what he's offering. The kind of connection that you have today in your Mitzvah Mashiach. That's what you come to the Rebbe for. Come to the Rebbe because you're coming to Mashiach, you're coming for Geula, you're not coming. So you could run around and say, the Rebbe is God. You could run around saying, the Rebbe is Mashiach. You could run around saying all of these things. But if you're on the outside, looking in, then you missed the boat. The whole point is, if the Rebbe is one with God, and the Rebbe is Mashiach, then you know what he has to offer you. Not a cure for hemorrhoids, not parnasa, not children, not... All those things come along, that's a byproduct of the connection. What he has to offer you is your essential bond with God. That's what he has to offer. And that's what you have to come for. That's what we come to the Rebbe for. If you're coming for anything else, you missed the boat. Even if you're coming for Mashiach, but a Mashiach that you're going to be a bystander and watch the light and the sound and light show, and the fireworks, and you're going to be watching the Rebbe do his thing, and you're going to and you see yourself as on the outside, an observer, a viewer watching it. Then you must, because the whole point of coming to the Rebbe is that I am it. That my whole being is that I'm coming to the Rebbe. That my whole being should be experiencing the goal. Experiencing Gula means tedachu, that the chassid have and the Eibishter are all one. That there is no separation, that I no longer live in a world, in a reality, in which I myself and the world I live in are separate from its creator. But I have now entered into a reality where me and therefore everything that is shaykh to me is completely one with the creator. That's Gula. Gula is experiencing reality from God's point of view. And from God's point of view, there's nothing outside of him. From people's point of view, they wish to make a world with symptoms, with all of these tricks, that there's such a thing as people who walk around and they experience a point of view that they're separate and distinct from the Abish. That doesn't mean it's true, it just means that they experience things that way. It's the biggest lie. Because from the Abish's point of view, there's nothing outside of him, it's all him. But the Rebbe is saying is that when you come to me, I'm giving you the opportunity, which means when you come to me, what does Mashiach do? Mashiach makes a world in which God's point of view is the reality. And the Rebbe says, come to me, that's what you're coming for. If you're coming for anything else, it's nice, it's wonderful. It might be very meaningful for you, it might be very spiritual for you. You could be coming for material needs. You could even be coming for the highest spiritual needs. The highest, deepest spiritual needs. You want to be mice and nefesh for the Rebbe. You mamish want to experience such a deep bond and connection with the Rebbe that you have total mesuz nefesh. And who could knock such a thing? Who could put down such a person? But the fact is, the Rebbe says, that's all nice, but that's not what this mesuz is about. This mesuz is about essence. This mesuz is about essence. And that's why you won't be able to learn a maimah. And you won't be able to learn a sikha. And you won't be able to learn anything without the subject coming back to essence. Because that's what this mesuz is all about. That's what I came to teach the world. You want to know where to find panimius? There's a lot of maimonim did the Alter Rebbe, the Mittler Rebbe. You want chachma, the Alter Rebbe. You want bina, the Mittler Rebbe. You want das, the Tzavot Tzedek. You want netzach, you have marash, you want hayd. You say whatever you want. It's all there. You have everything. All the panimius is there. You want essence. Essence. This mesuz is about essence. And therefore, every time you have to never explain each Indian, the devil brings it how it all ties to that. That's all mitzad. Mitzad this dag and that dag. But mitzad the etzem, it's this one. That's so what do you, if mitzad etzem, it's all one, what do you need all of these explanations? The answer is that the point is not that the etzem should completely cancel out all other existence, but that the essence should be revealed in each one of these levels of existence. So we need to understand all these different levels. And we need to understand all these different, we need to understand things from every different level of spirituality and so on. We need that. Because God doesn't want that the essence, the revelation of the essence should blow everything out of existence. But the revelation of the essence should be revealed in everything that exists. And therefore we have to understand each one of those things. But the bottom line is the essence. And that's what this is all about from day one. It was always about Mashiach. It's never about anything else. It was always about to bring the Shekhinah Lamata Baretz. That, what does it mean, the Shekhinah Lamata Baretz? That means that the physical reality and the divine reality are the same thing. That there's no separation between them. What does it mean a separation? What does it mean God is in the Rakia? The first heaven, the third heaven, the seventh heaven, what does it mean God's in the heaven? God is everywhere. It means in terms of our perception that of how we perceive our connection to God, how distant is our perception of our reality from God's reality? Doesn't mean that God's not here. He was always here. He never left. He never went anywhere. It means that the perception of his reality became more distant from our perception. So bringing the Shekhinah down to the world, what does that mean? It doesn't mean revealing something that wasn't here before. Bringing something from somewhere else that wasn't here before. It means that the physical reality reflects the divine reality. And physical beings are able to perceive the divine reality as the true reality. That's what it means. That's what it means, the Shekhinah is down in the earth. It doesn't mean that there's going to be glows and rays of light. That's not what it means. There's no rays. It means the divine reality is the physical reality. The physical reality is a complete reflection of an extension of the divine.
So would you say that when we say that Moshe Rabbeinu brought the Shekhinah down, that in reality, so to speak, he was really more opening the eyes of the people around him rather than changing the physical makeup of the world?
Yeah, in order to see a different reality, it has to become part of the physical reality.
But you're saying that there are always
it has to become part of the physical reality in order to actually perceive it.
But you're saying that it always was. Hashem didn't change. It's us that changed.
But it was concealed.
But it's concealed because we couldn't see it. Hashem is always part of the essence of a Yid. Our problem, we can't see it.
Why just concealed because we couldn't see it? It was concealed meaning that not only from our eyes was it concealed, but it was concealed from our reality. It actually was not our reality. The concealment from relative to our existence was real. From God's point of view, the concealment is not real. From God's point of view, there is no concealment. But from our point of view, the concealment is a real concealment. The world was not ready for it. The world needed a lot of work. And not only that, even when we had that momentary experience with Moshe Rabbeinu, didn't last. So the only thing we got, the only thing that was left over from it was this physical embodiment of that reality in the Beis HaMikdash. Which illuminated the whole world in a way, but still the world wasn't really ready for it.
Yeah.
And that's why the Mishkan was dismantled, and the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. The world wasn't really ready for it. It's through our avodah of thousands.